A Sudan Airways flight is down at Khartoum. Dayjet will test NextGen for the FAA in Florida. And Salem, Oregon issues a dare to the FAA. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Wednesday, June 11th, 2008. There continue to be conflicting reports as to what caused a Sudan Airways airliner to catch fire after landing at Khartoum International Airport Tuesday night. But most sources agree that at least half the 217 passengers and crew on board were able to escape the burning wreckage. According to scheduling timetables posted on the airline's website, the accident flight appears to be SD-109, inbound from Damascus. Footage from the scene shows the burning wreckage of what looks to be an Airbus A310. While most reports indicate the airliner overran the runway while landing in a thunderstorm, Khartoum Airport Director Youssef Ibrahim told Sudanese television the airliner had landed safely and that the pilot was in communication with ground control when one of the engines exploded and the plane caught fire. The Associated Press reports that account contradicts statements from Sudanese police. Chief Mohammed Najib told officials bad weather, quote, caused the plane to crash land, split into two, and catch fire, unquote. We'll provide updates as details become available in the print version of this story at www.aero-news.net. Maybe we won't have to wait till 2020 for NextGen after all. Early Tuesday morning, Dayjet Corporation signed a memorandum of agreement with the FAA to begin a 5-year phased implementation of proven NextGen technologies throughout Florida in collaboration with the Florida Department of Transportation Aviation Office and Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. The agreement could accelerate deployment of next-gen technologies nationally, integrating real-time surveillance and performance data in the air carrier's network control system and setting the stage for automated flight planning and disruption recovery. Dayjet's participation is also significant in that it's the first to focus on the safe expansion of airspace outside metropolitan areas via small community airports using modern very light jets. U.S. Transportation Secretary Mary Peters had announced in March that Florida would serve as the national testbed for accelerating NextGen. The first phase of the project will focus on deploying required navigation performance technology, allowing aircraft operators to fly more precise flight paths at optimum altitudes to reduce fuel burn, carbon emissions, and noise. Phase 1 will also deploy ADS-B. The second phase, starting in 2009, will implement system-wide information management for enhanced weather awareness and management. Phase 3, which starts in 2011, will deploy performance-based communications for flight plan management. The Salem, Oregon City Council voted to deny a license to Leading Edge Aviation, a helicopter flight school hoping to set up shop at Salem Municipal Airport, also called McNary Field. The council claims the school poses health, safety, and welfare concerns, but the victory by NIMBYs near the airport may be short-lived. FAA spokesman Mike Fergus told the Salem Statesman Journal, the agency is concerned that denial puts federal funding for the airport at risk, quote, from the standpoint it would be a discrimination of access, unquote. Leading Edge VP Travis Worthen said the council's decision went against an advisory board recommendation and advice from staffers. He theorizes, quote, they are waiting for the FAA to force their hand, unquote. Should Leading Edge file a grievance with the FAA, and Worthen says that's the likely scenario, the FAA will initially attempt to reach an informal, amicable solution. If that approach fails, a formal investigation will be launched, possibly leading to a formal order to allow the school to open. And if city leaders continue to defy the agency at that point, then the lawyers get involved. Salem City Councilor Laura Tesler concedes, quote, there is probably litigation pending, unquote. Neighbors of the airport openly celebrated when Silver State Helicopters closed down its operation at McNary Field and say they hope to keep their neighborhood quiet. The Daily Telegraph reports the pilot of a Garuda Indonesia Airlines flight that crashed on landing in March 2007 may face life in prison. Marwoto Komar was the captain of a Boeing 737-400 that overshot the runway on landing at Yogyakarta Airport in central Java and slid into a rice field. The aircraft burst into flames, killing 21. 119 others escaped with injuries of varying severity. Investigators said Komar ignored repeated warnings from cockpit alarms and from his co-pilot that the jet was coming in for landing much too fast. Indonesia's National Transportation Safety Committee found the pilot was singing during the approach, which was not in accordance with the Garuda Basic Operations Manual policy for a sterile cockpit below 10,000 feet. The report accused the pilot of becoming fixated on completing the landing when a go-around was clearly required. Komar resigned, ending his 22-year career with the airline. International pilot groups have decried any criminal action against Komar, saying the case could establish a dangerous precedent for any commercial pilot involved in a fatal accident. Up next on ANN, a new Las Vegas reliever airport is delayed, but will it even be needed? Delta pilots don't expect to be asked for concessions. And Boeing faces another embarrassing program delay. You're listening to Aero News.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. For 3 years running, the Cirrus SR-22 G2 has been the world's best-selling single-engine four-seat airplane. Today, the SR-22 G2 defines the new Cirrus standard model. Why? We'd love to invite you to see for yourself by taking a ride in the new breed of airplane that has taken the aviation industry by storm. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or on the web at cirrusdesign.com. Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. For instance, the noise-canceling microphone used in the Clarity Aloft headset is a high-fidelity, noise-canceling electret condenser microphone with performance optimized for speech frequencies in extremely high-noise environments. Stage performers and musicians use this same microphone because they must insist on the highest level of sound reproduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for June 11th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. McCarran International Airport in Las Vegas is nearing capacity, but plans for a new reliever airport 25 miles out in the desert are running as much as 2 years late, according to a report in the Las Vegas Sun. The $7 billion-plus venture known as Ivanpah Valley Airport is in a hold while the FAA studies the impact on airspace in southern Nevada. The delay could push the opening of the facility out as far as 2019. Meanwhile, capacity at McCarran is projected to hit the wall sometime between 2011 and 2014 as developers continue building thousands of new hotel rooms. But one analyst is now saying those concerns are misplaced. Jack Keady, president of Keady Transportation Consulting in Playa del Rey, California, believes that airline capacity cuts being announced now won't be reversed anytime soon. Of the new Ivanpah Airport, Keady asks, quote, "Why do they need it? There's not going to be a big resurgence based on easy money and cheap oil. How can you possibly justify a new airport in the middle of nowhere?" Unquote. We have to pause and smile here and recall that a few decades ago, the same question was being asked about the entire Las Vegas Strip. Still, a Morgan Stanley report in late May found that in November of 2007, the number of deplaned passengers at McCarran International fell 2% over the prior year. That's the first time that's happened since mid-2003. Stunted growth in Sin City would obviously be really bad news for developers who've bet on continued growth. But it's not the end of the world for McCarran International Airport Chief Randy Walker. Quote, "I've said many times, if the demand's not there, we do not want to build it. But that said, we're still not going to sit on our hands for the next 3 to 4 years. We're going to continue planning, looking forward as we have been. Anything else would be irresponsible." Unquote. The head of Delta Airlines Pilots Union told the Associated Press Monday he doesn't think record fuel prices will force management to ask pilots for wage concessions during Delta's acquisition of Northwest Airlines. Just weeks ago, Delta negotiated a new post-merger agreement with its own pilots, agreeing to wage increases and stock in the new company. Lee Moak, chairman of the Delta Pilot Union's executive committee, told an interviewer he doesn't see Delta coming back to its pilots with hat in hand to pay for Jet A. Quote, "Hypothetically, if oil goes to $200 a barrel and we're not able to raise ticket prices, anything can happen. But at some point, something is going to have to give. I don't think it's going to be labor concessions. I think it's going to be rational ticket pricing to cover our cost." Unquote. Delta has announced cuts in both capacity and jobs and hinted that more changes could be coming if oil's breathtaking rise in price continues. But Moak repeated earlier union concerns that the real issue facing pilots in Delta is the integration of the workforce after the stock swap acquisition of Northwest by Delta is completed. That's expected sometime late this year. Moak says the reason that talks between the two pilot groups ended in stalemate early this year was an inability to agree on pilot seniority rankings as the groups come together. At that time, it was thought the lack of an agreement in advance by pilots would kill the deal. But now that it's been done and the clock is ticking, Moak says he's confident a deal will get done by the time the merger closes. But, quote, if there isn't a deal done, we'll continue to work on it, unquote. Boeing once again finds itself forced to admit a program delay, just a week after a company official denied there was a problem. The only good news this time is it has nothing to do with the 787 Dreamliner. Instead, Boeing announced on Tuesday the 737-based Wedgetail surveillance aircraft won't start deliveries to Australia's Royal Air Force until 2010 due to continued systems integration issues. Bloomberg notes that's 1 year later than previously thought. It's also 1 year later than Boeing spokesman David Sloan said the first planes would be delivered in comments he made just last week. As ANN reported, the Wedgetail is named after a native Australian eagle. It's essentially a 737-700 fitted with a wedge-shaped early warning radar platform sourced from Northrop Grumman and BAE. The first example rolled out of Boeing's Renton plant way back in 2002, with delivery slated to begin in 2006. That obviously didn't happen, and Australian Defense Minister Brendan Nelson said then his country was very disappointed with what was then forecast to be at least a 2-year delay. Now, that 2 years has gone by, and it looks like another year will go by as well. Department of Defense spokesman Chris Diebel calmly observed, quote, "The further delay relates to continuing maturity, stability, and performance problems being experienced with subsystems and system integration. These issues are being progressively resolved as part of the developmental test and evaluation process," unquote. Under the revised schedule, Boeing will deliver the first two Wedgetail aircraft to Australia in early 2010, with the remaining four planes coming before the end of that year. In 2006, Boeing estimated it would take a pre-tax hit of as much as $500 million after announcing the delays. There's no word yet on financial impact this time around. Three people escaped serious injury Friday evening when two aircraft collided over the runway at North Central State Airport in Smithfield, Rhode Island. The FAA says just before 6 p.m. Eastern, an arriving twin-engine Piper PA-30 Twin Comanche with one person on board landed on top of a departing Beech A-36 Bonanza with two on board. The Woonsocket call reports fire crews from Smithfield responded and found the two planes about 750 feet apart on the runway with significant damage from the crash. The pilot of the Piper was transported to be checked out at Rhode Island Hospital after suffering abrasions and other minor injuries, while occupants of the Bonanza, who had been departing for New Jersey, were treated at the scene and suffered no apparent injuries. Fire Chief Joseph Mollo says the Bonanza was taking off when the collision sheared its left wing off. The second plane also suffered damage to a wing and may have lost a small wingtip fuel tank. Jack Ryan, a private pilot from Skipack, Pennsylvania, told the newspaper he had attempted to fly out of North Central earlier in the day to make his way home by visual flight rules, but returned after encountering low visibility. FAA investigators arrived at the scene on Friday night. Still ahead, AirShares Elite acquires iFly. Israel wants the Texan T6A to be its new trainer. And can your airplane fly itself home after losing half a wing? You're listening to Aero News.
Remember what the future used to look like? The flying cars, the spaceports, the rocket packs and spandex outfits. That was some future, wasn't it? But hey, here's the real future. A Garmin Wass Navigator. It makes its own glide path out of GPS signals, so you can land IFR at thousands of airports with no ILS or other ground-based approaches. Now that's a future you can believe in. Garmin Wass GPS. Follow the leader.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800 for Cessna.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Wednesday, June 11th, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. Professional aircraft management company AirShares Elite announced Monday it has purchased iFly, the Southern California-based aero club, effective immediately. AirShares tells ANN the acquisition will extend the company's penetration in the Southern California market while greatly expanding the network of iFly's Los Angeles and San Diego area members. AirShares Elite CEO David Lee says the acquisition will provide significant benefits for the customers of both companies. Quote, "Together, we will offer our customers an even greater range of flying experiences, more planes in more locations, with a larger, more experienced, and more capable organization," unquote. The company will operate a fleet of Cirrus SR22 G3 turbos, which iFly chairman Andrew DeMond believes will provide greater utility to iFly's members, who previously flew a fleet of normally aspirated Columbia 350s. AirShares Elite will provide access to its transition training program to iFly's members, enabling them to begin flying its fleet of Cirrus aircraft within the next few weeks. The Defense Security Cooperation Agency notified Congress this week of a possible foreign military sale to Israel of T-6A Texan aircraft, as well as associated equipment and services. The government of Israel wants 25 Hawker Beechcraft T-6A Texan, GPS and inertial navigation equipment, related parts, publications, maintenance, and other support, worth an estimated $190 million. The DSCA notes that due to Israel's strategic position, quote, "It's vital to the U.S. national interest to assist Israel to develop and maintain a strong and ready self-defense capability. This proposed sale is consistent with those objectives," unquote. The Israeli Air Force's current fleet of Zucat aircraft was produced in the early 60s. High fuel and maintenance costs and low mission-capable rates led to a decision to procure new trainers. DSCA reports the new T-6A turboprops will reduce training fuel requirements by 66% and will not affect the basic military balance in the region. Two suspended Pinnacle Airlines employees are still in hot water with the company, but at least the legal case against them has been settled. Pilot Jeffrey Bradford and flight attendant Adriana Connor admitted that they had retreated to a wooded area near Swatara Township in central Pennsylvania the night of May 18th for a romantic interlude. The law got involved when Adriana was allegedly found highly intoxicated in the local fire chief's Chevy Tahoe, and Jeffrey apparently couldn't find his clothes in the dark woods and was apprehended after appearing in only flip-flops and a wristwatch to ask a female homeowner if he could borrow some shorts. The Harrisburg Patriot News reports each pleaded guilty Monday to one charge of disorderly conduct and have each been fined $300. Other charges, including indecent exposure, public lewdness, and a theft of a motor vehicle, were dropped. Dauphin County Prosecutor Michael L. Rosman said, quote, "I don't think it was anyone's intention to commit a crime here," unquote. Fortunately for the two, they're apparently not being billed for costs for the manhunt or use of a police helicopter. That search got underway after Adriana told arresting officers there was a naked man out in the woods somewhere. And finally, can your plane do this? Rockwell Collins has performed an impressive demonstration of new technology for automated control of a heavily damaged aircraft. The Automatic Supervisory Adaptive Control Technology, or ASAC for short, was obtained through the company's acquisition of Athena Technologies, and it already demonstrated its ability to maintain control of a scale model FA-18, which had lost an aileron. But Mike Myers, VP of Business Development for Rockwell Collins Government Systems, said DARPA wanted to see more. Quote, "DARPA asked us to significantly increase the level of damage and risk in this latest flight test campaign to really put the technology through its paces," unquote. So, in the subsequent test, half of the airplane's right wing was ejected to simulate battle damage and in-flight failure. During a second flight, almost 60% of the airplane's right wing was ejected. The system reacted to the airplane's new vehicle configuration, automatically regained baseline performance, continued to fly the plane, then landed it autonomously using inertial and GPS reference only. The technology is aimed at UAVs, but Rockwell Collins believes it has demonstrated ASAC's value to manned military aircraft, and even to commercial, business, and general aviation for full flight automation and backup. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is ATP instructor and author Karen Kahn, and we'll talk about how to improve the airline passenger experience, as well as some thoughts on applying for a job with the airlines. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.